what would you do if your employer asked you to do something that violated your personal ethics and principles? Would you do it anyway? What if refusing to do it could cost you your job? Do you take that chance? Or do you just keep your head down? Today we'll tell you about a woman who would not go away quietly. Instead of keeping her head down, she sued the US government, and she just may win. I'm John Kiriakou. Welcome to The Whistleblowers. Stephanie Carter is a nurse in a Department of Veterans Affairs hospital in Texas. The Department of Veterans Affairs is, of course, a component of the U.S. federal government. And as part of the government, the Department of Veterans Affairs provides abortion services to its patients. Since the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade last year, a decision from the 1970s that guaranteed a woman's right to an abortion, many states across the country have outlawed or restricted the procedure. Texas is one of those states, even if the federal government continues to allow for abortions in federal facilities. Stephanie Carter is a practicing Christian who is opposed to abortion. She recently told a reporter that over the course of her 57 years, she's had 6 abortions, 4 as a consequence of being raped. She said, quote, "I'm a person who has had abortions in the past. That was before I came to the Lord, and it was before I had the relationship that I have with him now. I thought that abortions were okay, and I didn't give them a thought, really. Before I found my faith, abortions were used as birth control," unquote. Carter is also a veteran of the U.S. Army, who has worked at the VA hospital for 23 years. She is now seeking a court injunction to block the Department of Veterans Affairs from compelling her and other colleagues to participate in providing any abortion-related services. The suit has the support of 18 state attorneys general, although it is strongly opposed by the Biden administration. We're going to discuss the lawsuit and the issue of abortions in federal facilities with Stephanie Carter's attorney, Danielle Runyon, of the First Liberty Institute. Danielle, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, John.
I have so much to ask you. Let's begin with the availability of abortions in federal hospitals. Many Americans, I think, assume that abortions have been available in federal hospitals since Roe v. Wade was decided in the 1970s, but that's not really true. This is actually a Biden administration policy that was implemented only in September. Why was this decision made? Was it in response to Roe v. Wade being overturned?
Yes, it appears that that was in direct response to the Dobbs decision. And the, you know, this is a 30-year prohibition on abortion services being provided at the VA. It hasn't been allowed. It hasn't been allowed at any time since the VA hospitals have been in effect. So, you know, this is something that Congress has the right to change. It is not something that the Secretary of Veterans Affairs has the right to allow by virtue of a rule that was promulgated, frankly, unlawfully.
I have to admit to you that I'm shocked that there's not an opt-out mechanism for people who do not want to be associated with abortions. It just seems logical to me that the government would not want to force employees to do something that they object to and would want to limit litigation over the issue, frankly. But that's not the case. Is the government's position that federal employees have to do as they're told, even in cases of abortion? Is that really what this is all about?
Well, the federal government's position is that this is a lawfully implemented rule. And what we're challenging, specifically with respect to the injunctive relief, and for those who might not know what injunctive relief means, it means that we are looking for emergency relief from the court to say this rule can no longer be enforced at the facility where Ms. Carter works. We believe that, as I had mentioned previously, Congress is the only entity that has the authority to change this prohibition on abortion services being allowed to be provided for either veterans or their beneficiaries, and that implementing it by way of a rule is just simply not allowed. And under RFRA, which is the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which is what we are using to argue Ms. Carter's rights in support of her rights in federal court, RFRA says that if the government is going to substantially burden an individual's religious beliefs, that they have to have a compelling interest for doing that. And here, there just cannot be a compelling interest when this rule, has been unlawfully implemented. Therefore, we say that there is no reason for this rule to be enforced at the particular facility where Ms. Carter works as a nurse practitioner.
I'm curious whether you can speculate as to why the Biden administration didn't go through the legislative process in Congress to have this done. Until just January, the Democrats controlled both the House and the Senate. They don't control the House now, so it wouldn't make any sense to try to do this legislatively. But they did control both houses of Congress until January of this year. Why is it that they didn't try to do this the way that it was meant to be done?
You know, I can't answer that question, but what I will say is that it appears to have been done very hastily. There was a lot of pressure being put on the administration by a number of their allies. What we cite too in our brief is there were a number of attorneys general who were saying, you know, for health-related reasons, which is what we see the rules stating, for health-related reasons, which could be a number of reasons, without any gestational age limits, that abortions must be provided. So, you know, when this rule was implemented, they failed to follow proper notice and comment procedures. They just implemented it without anyone being allowed to voice their opinions. They also implemented it without a religious accommodation process being in place. And by virtue of our litigation, there is now a religious accommodation process that's in place for employees to say, I have a religious objection to performing abortion services.
This lawsuit is not at all a case of the government taking one position and your client taking another. You've cited the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which ensures that interests in religious freedom are protected. The government's position seems to be a pretty clear, I'm not a lawyer, but it seems to be a pretty clear violation of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. What's the government's argument here to try to overcome that?
The government is basically relying on the fact that, Section 106 of the Veterans Health Care Act, which was implemented in 1992, they believe that through that, there's no prohibition on the Secretary of Veterans Affairs implementing this rule, that under a code provision, that the secretary has broad authority to do this, and that there's no violation of the law. Therefore, that is their compelling interest, that there is a clear need to save the lives of veterans and their beneficiaries. There was a report that was put out by the House of Representatives that we also cite to in our brief, and they're stating that birthing a child is something that could be a health risk. And because of that, veterans need to, especially now in light of the Dobbs decision, and especially in states where there are significant restrictions on abortion services, that they are doing this to save the lives of veterans and their beneficiaries.
You have filed this case in the federal Western District of Texas, which is a pretty conservative court. I would assume that regardless of which way the district court rules, the case will likely go to the Federal Court of Appeals and possibly onto the Supreme Court. With the support of so many state attorneys general, is that the plan, to be prepared for the long haul?
Yeah, we're always prepared for the long haul. And considering the position that just the administration has taken on this issue in general, I think it's likely that's the course of action that will need to be taken here. I think that this really, in my opinion, looking at this objectively, even though we're representing Ms. Carter, I think this case speaks for itself. There is no compelling interest for this rule being enforced. It really needs to go back to Congress, and Congress needs to decide if this is the appropriate course of action for the Department of Veterans Affairs to be taking.
Tell us a little bit about the uniqueness of this case. You know, before the Dobbs decision came down, it seemed like every state in America, I'm exaggerating, of course, but many states across America had different versions of of bills or laws that would have restricted abortion or in some cases ended abortion. A lot of them were combined in the courts. Dobbs ended up going to the Supreme Court, and a lot of state legislatures decided to wait on taking action to decide what the Supreme Court was going to do in Dobbs. Or to see, rather, what the Supreme Court was going to do in Dobbs. Are there other cases around the country similar to the one that you have filed that are looking at the Department of Veterans Affairs or perhaps the Department of Defense that might be combined with your case? Or is this case unique? It's a pure case and is going through the courts as such?
First of all, to answer one of your questions, I'm not sure. I have not heard that there are other lawsuits out there that are challenging the rule or the enforcement of the rule. I will say that our case is unique because we are not looking for a nationwide injunction. We are challenging this rule at this particular facility in Texas. This Right. particular facility is under the concurrent jurisdiction of both the state of Texas and the federal government. That poses some unique issues because, as we know, Texas has very strict abortion rules. And another thing that we cite too in our brief is the fact that for those who participate in services, even if it's going to be in the course of their employment, they're going to be subjected to state law, to Texas's laws that say there's going to be criminal and civil liability for somebody who participates in the breadth of services that the Veterans Department of Veterans Affairs says is appropriate for their employees to be engaged in.
We are speaking with attorney Danielle Runyon about a U.S. court case challenging the federal government's position on providing abortions in government hospitals, or at least in one government hospital in Texas, thus forcing employees to participate in them, even when they are personally opposed to abortion. Stay with us. We'll take a short break and come right back.
UK Defense Secretary Ben Wallace recently said, "I'm optimistic between this year and the next year. I think Ukraine will continue to have the momentum with it and a position of strength." He also said, "There's no magic wand moment when Russia collapses." In what universe does Wallace reside?
Welcome back to The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. We're speaking with attorney Danielle Runyon about a lawsuit challenging the U.S. government's policy of forcing federal hospital employees to participate in abortions when they are opposed to them for moral, ethical, and religious reasons. The plaintiff in the case is a Christian employee of the Department of Veterans Affairs, Stephanie Carter. Danielle, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.
One of the points that you've made in the media is that there has been not only no mechanism by which Stephanie could discuss her position with her supervisors, but that her supervisors never even attempted to discuss her position or her principles to try to come up with some sort of an accommodation. Why do you think that is? It seems like this whole issue spiraled unnecessarily because the government simply wouldn't have a conversation with your client.
Well, I think that it started with the rule itself. You know, the rule didn't discuss the religious objections that employees may have or how to handle them. And as you mentioned, you know, Ms. Carter gave this process time. She reached out to her supervisors on two occasions and was just told, you know, just wait, more information coming. Never got an approved accommodation to not participate in certain services. You know, as a nurse practitioner, Ms. Carter sees pregnant patients. She performs a lot of the duties that doctors perform. And she was going ahead performing her duties all while in October, she had received an email, as many of the other employees at that facility did, stating that, you know, abortion services were going to be provided. So at what point is someone supposed to just sit around and wait while their conscience is being violated?
Right. Danielle, these complicated legal issues usually rest on some sort of legal precedent. Tell us a little bit about the case, the background of the case, and about the history of respect for religious freedom on which the case is based.
So the Religious Freedom Restoration Act is something that we refer to as a super statute. And this is, you know, religious freedom, the protection of those who have religious beliefs is something that's paramount. And when legislation or even, you know, laws, rules are put into effect, that's supposed to be considered. The potential religious objections and the religious rights of whether it be employees or citizens needs to be considered. And here, that was just certainly not a consideration at all. And I think what we've seen from this administration on a number of occasions, especially throughout the COVID pandemic, is that religious employees were being displaced from employment, whether it be private or the federal government, in incredible numbers. And so, you know, that can't be. And we just can't allow the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, the First Amendment to the Constitution, to be completely ignored. People have rights. And in this case, as I had previously mentioned, this law was not promulgated in a lawful manner. So that combined with the complete disregard for the rights of those who have sincerely held religious beliefs in the workplace, there's just no compelling interest. Again, I'm citing to the standard that's cited in the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. There's no compelling interest, which is the requirement for this rule to go forward at this facility. And, you know, we aren't seeing it and we're still not seeing it. And this matter has already been fully briefed.
Many Americans may see this case as one pitting progressives against conservatives. I actually don't see it that way, and I suspect that you don't either. This seems to be a constitutional issue. What kind of support are you getting from groups on the political left that may disagree with you on other issues, but for which preservation of the Constitution is important? Are there any?
I have not heard from any to date, but it, you know, that's precisely the point. I had written an opinion piece that was published by Fox News, and that's exactly what I say at the end. You know, this has just been so trumped up as a political issue. Mm-hmm. This has nothing to do with politics. It has to do with following the law. And no matter what side of the issue you're on, you should want to see that your government is taking action in a lawful manner. And as I hate to sound repetitive, but I'll say it again. If Congress wants to act on this, and if they want to move forward and allow the Department of Veterans Affairs to do this, they are the ones who have the authority to make that call. The secretary does not have the unilateral authority to do that. And for that reason, as it stands right now, this rule should not be enforced at the facility where Ms. Carter works.
You make a very important point there. This actually is not a partisan issue. This is an issue pertaining to the rule of law and to respect for the Constitution. But government, because of its size, because of its power and its strength, often thinks that it can just roll all over any kind of opposition that happens to pop up in order to implement policies that whoever happens to be in power wants to implement. That's what the courts are for. It's to stop this kind of government overreach. You know, I attended a rally recently that was very much a product of both the political right and the political left coming together, specifically about this issue of the rule of law. And I can't help but to think that regardless of how one feels about the issue of abortion, what is at stake here is not abortion. The Supreme Court has already ruled on abortion. The issue here is respect for the rule of law. And it seems to me that the likes of, let's say, the American Civil Liberties Union, for example, or the Libertarian Party, even, would be rushing to your side to file friends of the court brief, for example, or people for whom the Constitution is important would be writing to their state attorneys general saying, we want you to support this this case. Are you getting any of that at all? Anything in the way of outside support? Whether you've already answered about progressive groups, but anybody else?
So, you know, the friends of the court support that we've received is, as you mentioned at the beginning of the segment, from the states, and then also from one of the former secretaries of the Department of Veterans Affairs. And you know, it's unfortunate because everybody's just so quick to look at this issue because abortion is just a politicized matter. Mm-hmm. And what people don't understand is their rights, whatever their rights may be, perhaps they have nothing to do with religion at all. If we're going to do this here, don't think that, you know, we're not, the administration's not going to try to do this in other matters. And until, I guess, people are personally affected, they're not going to see that. But we really need to take the politics out of it, take the issue out of it even, and just look at the fact that this is just something that was not allowed, and it needs to be stopped.
You know, this show obviously, clearly, is called The Whistleblowers, and that's what we talk about every episode. We talk about whistleblowers. The whistleblower here is Stephanie Carter. Stephanie Carter is just a normal person. She's a normal person going to work every day to do her job. She's made it 57 years without getting her name in the press, and here, all of a sudden, she's the face of a national legal case. Tell us a little bit about Stephanie, about why this is so important to her that she's willing to single herself out and to make herself perhaps vulnerable to retaliation, something that is quite common for whistleblowers.
Ms. Carter is a wonderful person. She is just not only from a faith standpoint, but she's been with the Department of Veterans Affairs for 23 years in the nursing capacity. As you had mentioned earlier, she served for 8 years in the Army. So this woman is committed to serving her country and to serving those who have served alongside of her and who have also, you know, served in other capacities. This is a very difficult thing for anyone to do, to stand alone, even, which, you know, in this lawsuit, she's standing alone, but certainly not on the issue. And it's difficult, especially in this climate of the view on the topic of abortion. That is just a tremendously difficult, hard thing to do. And she is brave. And I think that speaks volumes. This woman's sincerely held religious beliefs are firm, and the rights that she has and the rights that others have in terms of being allowed to work and serve the God that they, you know, to stand by their faith is something that is, people don't understand how ingrained that is in so many people. And here at the Department of Veterans Affairs, this is unheard of. Abortion services have never been provided. And for now, suddenly, for this to be a thing and for it to be done so hastily and without much explanation of what this really looks like and how these services are going to be provided. And you know, well, I work in a facility in Texas and I know what Texas laws are, and am I going to be held criminally liable? Mm-hmm. It's not only improper for this rule to be implemented in the first place, but then to just put people out there to feel so vulnerable and unsure of themselves and their job is wrong. That's not what our federal government should be doing to its employees.
I'd like to thank our guest, Danielle Runyon, for joining us. And thank you to our viewers. Remember, the freedom of religion is guaranteed in the U.S. Constitution. Not only that, but Thomas Jefferson, one of the country's founding fathers and its third president, wrote, "The constitutional freedom of religion is the most inalienable and sacred of all human rights. All men should enjoy the fullest tolerance of exercise of religion according to the dictates of conscience." That seems pretty clear to me. We'll see you next time.